You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom, and welcome to the American Hour. Of course, our lovely host, Paula Lazan-Osman, is here with us, broadcasting live from Boston. How are you tonight, Paula?
I'm great, Tom. It's 66 degrees out, and it's clear, and it was a beautiful day up here in Boston.
Awesome. And our good friend Dick Birnbach is on the line as well. Dick, from Port Orange, Florida, how are you doing?
Doing good, Tom. Hi, Paula.
Hi, Dick.
Now, we've got a guest that's going to be coming on the show in a little while, and her name is Deb Casso, and she's going to talk to us about some different items, such as treaties that are going on behind our back, and the personal property rights, ICLEI, Agenda 21. We've had some guests on in the past to talk about that, but she's got a few new twists for us and thoughts and things that people ought to know, so we'll get her on the air when she calls in. But there have been some things in the news here recently, have there not, Paula? Some interesting developments about the election and our country, economy, what's going on over in Europe. But one of the things I want to talk about real quickly is our good friend Nick Taxi at Da Progressive. He's got a few articles out in the last few weeks, and one that just came out today is that President Obama has apologized to the American people. Or no, he hasn't actually apologized, but he said, hey, look, I never wanted to be president to begin with. It's a satirical article, folks, but it's funny. It's very, very funny. And basically, the president says that, hey, my arm was twisted. I didn't really want to do this. I'm taking a lot of crap for something I really, you know, am not enjoying doing. And in the article, the funny part about it is that conservative strategists and, you know, people that have been out to try and, you know, highlight his inadequacies, et cetera, actually kind of feel bad. They interview a few of the strategists, say, yeah, I feel kind of bad for picking on him so much because, you know, he didn't really want the job to begin with. And then some of the Democrats they interview are saying, yeah, we're kind of surprised and we feel sorry for him too. And maybe the Republicans will be a little nicer to him now anyway. So that's the gist of the article, because he said almost everything up to this point besides, hey, I never wanted this job to begin with. He's pointed the finger at everybody else. It's not my fault. He said, oh, most recently, I haven't, you know, the first year we were in office, we spent a lot of our time focusing on doing the right thing. Now, Paula, if he were doing the right thing, would unemployment be over 9%, the dollar value continuing to dip and go lower and lower, and the stock market continuing a downward trend, home sales way down, home values way down? If he had done the, quote, right thing for the American people, would all those things be going on right now?
No, absolutely not. But who knows what the right thing is? Who knows what the right thing is, Tom? Seriously.
Well, and you know what? I think that most Americans would have thought the right thing to do. Now, we're not talking morals and integrity and, you know, all that stuff. I mean, that's all good stuff.
No.
What we're talking about, though, is the right thing to do. We hire you as President of the United States to be an influence and a leader to turn our economy around and get people back to work.
Right.
I mean, it's not his job necessarily to get people back to work, but to help convince Congress and the Senate to create an environment that allows for employers to hire, for businesses to expand, and that gets people back to work.
Right.
So when you talk about the right thing, it's the right thing for the American people. As president, there's a right thing to do if you're the pastor of a church. There's the right thing to do if you're the leader of a Cub Scout, you know, group. There's the right thing to do on and on and on. You know, if you're the leader of student body of a high school. But when it comes to being president of the United States, the right thing to do is be a leader and not focus on your own personal career and your own legacy by pushing things that have not benefited and have actually hurt our nation, and that's what he's done. So, but in any case, he makes the statement that, we haven't communicated as well as we should. Now, Charles Krauthammer today was talking about how he's deluded if he thinks that he hasn't communicated. In fact, My wife is from Canada, and she has said in the last couple of years to me, I've never seen somebody on the TV doing press conferences and interviews as much as this guy. This guy likes to talk. He's just always out there. And he's always sort of campaigning, it seems like. And I would agree with my wife, and I think that's what Charles, one of the points Charles made today was that he made the case for Obamacare like 38 times plus, going to the American people, doing interviews, talking about it. So to say that he hasn't communicated well about his policies, he had to push and push and cram and shove his policies down our throats and twist arms in the Congress while it was still a Democrat Congress to get these things done. Of course he's communicated. The problem is this, and I saw another article, and I don't remember who wrote it now, but the problem is he's not listening. He doesn't care what we have to say and what we want and what we're interested in. He only cares what he wants. And so he has absolutely communicated his desires and policies. We just don't want them. So why don't we play that clip, Paula, of Charles Krauthammer. This was on Fox News. I think Brett Baer was talking to him and asking some questions. And we've got there's a little bit of sound bite in there of the president himself talking and then Charles' analysis.
Okay.
Charles, I want to play another sound bite, an interview that the president gave with BET last night.
In the first year or so, we spent a lot of time just doing the right thing and not worrying about selling what we were doing. And I think that the more you're in this office, the more you have to say to yourself that telling a story to the American people is just as important as the actual policies that you're implementing. And they've got to have a sense of where it is that we're going to go, particularly during hard times.
Charles, that's amazing. I mean, I would call it delusional if I thought he believed it. He's telling us that he didn't spend enough time selling, doing the right thing, which he meant Obamacare. That's what he spent a year and a half on. He gave, what, 38 speeches? I lost the count at his approach to 40. He was out there all the time selling it. He sold it to on television. He sold it at a joint session of Congress. He tried to sell it everywhere. The dogs didn't like the dog food. That's simply a fact. The idea that somehow he has not been arguing enough, speaking enough, showing up on television enough, but instead intent on doing the right thing is hilarious. I mean, right now he's proposed a bill that's ostensibly about jobs that he knows that he's not going to pass. And even a Keynesian would object to because it's only half the size of Stimulus One, which didn't work itself. And then secondly, he's got a bill which he says is about debt that doesn't do anything on debt. Half of his cuts are not extending the surge in Afghanistan and Iraq for another 10 years. We are right out of Iraq in 3 months. These are farcical attempts at legislation. And he's pretending that he's so intent on doing the right thing, passing these bills, that he hasn't been selling enough. All he's doing is selling. Even the joint address to Congress ostensibly about jobs was a selling job. It wasn't a job about getting a bill passed. What about...
You know, Paula, the first thing that comes to mind is he said, you've got to tell the American, be telling the American people a story. You know, my grandmother, I remember the word story was a code word for lie. If she said to you, are you telling me a story?
Yeah.
Are you lying to me? So what he's saying to me in that little clip of Obama is like, I didn't do enough lying to the American people early on, and now it's catching up with me. Second of all, that he was doing the right thing and not communicating enough to the American people. As I said before, it's not about communicating to the American people. It's about listening to the American people.
Hello.
Hey, we just lost Tom. I've got Deb Casso on the line, though. Dick,
okay.
Would you like to introduce her?
Sure.
Okay, you go right ahead. Hi, Deb.
Hi, this is Deb Casso.
Hi. Dick, why
Hi,
don't
Deb.
You...
Dick Barenbach here. We're going to get Tom back in just a minute.
Oh, good, good.
Right. Dick, why don't you do some introductions on Deb?
Deb has been pretty active with the different treaties that are going on, ICLEI, and a bunch of other things our government is involved in that some people don't really realize what is going on. She's so up to date. She knows what's going on within the county that I live in. When I had a conversation with her, we had a real nice talk, and she said, oh, you people have really got problems in that county.
Yes, sustainable development is taking over our country in leaps and bounds, and we have local governments that either know nothing of it or are on board directing the county councils and commissioners towards sustainable development, and that while they're at that, they're breaking the banks of our counties. And they're doing this through grants and nonprofit organizations. And half the money from the taxpayers is paying the bills, to foot the bills for these beautiful plants that we see in the middle of the roads and parks and the train, you know, which we've been fighting against. And they're still going to go through with it, and they do it through very clever means. And I was at a county commissioner meeting last night where they're doing the stormwater. You hear a lot about stormwater these days and water itself and how they are going to regulate even how much water we're allowed to drink. And they will raise the price and tax us to the point where you'll be afraid to turn the tap on. So, I mean, that is happening in Volusia County. Actually, even sponsors a website or had up until the last FLARA meeting for FLARA, which is in cahoots. It's an environmental organization. And the taxpayers of Volusia County there are footing the bill for the website for a environmentalist organization. So it's pretty scary what's going on.
Do you think the politicians in office, say at the county levels, do you think they're really that stupid? I find it hard to believe that somebody would not know what's really going on. And if they do, why do they want to destroy our way of life for their own grandchildren?
Well, it's just the same reason that global governance is threatening us. It's an egotistical power play. And just think, if you were a new county commissioner that was elected and you knew nothing, walked into a position first day and they gave you all these magazines and catalogs that train you how to do your job, and you look up to your county administrator, who is a communist, and he knows how to play the game and make you look good and make you feel good right in the door. A lot of these new people, if they haven't been trained about sustainable development, know nothing of it. They have no clue. And many of them have come in and been there for years, and they already are on the MPO, you know, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, which is set up through the state. They're on different councils for transportation. They have no idea why and how these things got in and what the main plan is. They do not realize that they believe that they must take the money from the federal government for this or that, and because it's the state's money. That's how they look at it. But they don't realize all the strings that are attached. That when you take the train, for instance, if the train isn't making money, then the taxpayer's going to foot the bill, you know, forever and ever on something like that. And so they're not all aware of it. And the ones that are aware of it are obviously in the environmentalist ideology. They worship that. It's like devil worshiping. You know, we can't tell somebody that there's really a God and God is good if they're raised in believing in the devil. They're just not going to go there.
So what you're saying is Volusia County is just on a little power trip. They know what's going on, but they want to buy up all the land and have control of this, that, and the other thing, and take money hand over fist from the government, from the federal government, so they don't have to live within their means.
Well, they don't have to really live within their means, because what they have is everything is being run by what they call regionalism. It's the next step from the New World Order, okay? It's like a pyramid. And at the top is the New World Order, those being the most powerful by money leaders of the world. Below them is the regions and the regional governors. And the regional governors are all in each of our states throughout the country. And everything is broken up into regions and sub-regions. And in your region, in Volusia County, that region has been really funded not by only the taxpayers, but by Obama's stimulus money was taken big time. And in partnership with that stimulus money are private organizations and corporations that have gone in partnership to make things happen, to build things, to get the smart... You have the smart grid right where you are, don't you? The smart meter?
Smart meters
are going in all in that area. And that was like I think it was like $3 billion or something that Obama's money put in to put in the smart meters and the smart grid.
So are you aware that you can refuse
$1 million
to have a smart meter put
maybe
on?
Maybe it wasn't $3 billion. Maybe it was $700 million. Yeah.
You were aware that you don't have to have a smart meter put on?
Yes, I understand that, but I'm going to put it to you this way. If 9 out of 10 houses on your street have a smart meter and you don't, eventually under Agenda 21 and sustainable development is communitarianism. You know what that is. That's when the community decides something, you will be judged by your community, and you will be, it's a real democracy. It's like mob enforcement. So if 9 out of 10 of the houses have it and you don't, you will be forced to have it, because that is what a community is about. And under sustainable development, in your own little town, you probably have little communities going up called livable quality communities. It's under the Smart Growth Program, whereas you will be moved to be in an urban area, whereas everything is surrounded by the train or the transportation. So you can walk out your door, walk 5 minutes to the train or ride your bike there, take the train to your job, which will be planted right also next to the train, and you'll be in a community that's how it's run. It's a community plan, not a freedom plan or an independent individual plan. It goes by the community, not the individual. That's what's wrong with Agenda 21. It's a socialism plan. And
Tom Garcia. I dropped off. Welcome to the show. I got a couple questions for you. Number one, are we currently on our current path unsustainable?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. We're on an unsustainable path. Everything is unsustainable. Humans are unsustainable, according to the New World Order and the UN.
Well,
I put them in the same category. Because
no, that's what they're saying. What I'm asking you is, are we actually truly in reality unsustainable, and what evidence do they have that we are unsustainable?
We are in unsustainable, but they are making us unsustainable.
There you go.
They
okay.
are draining us economically, and that is the idea. They're doing it on purpose to drain anyone that has any money or owns anything. And they're draining their cash until they get you in a situation where you cannot afford your mortgage payment if you have a mortgage, or you cannot make that tax payment for your home, and then they will take your land. And that makes this path that we're on unsustainable. And
no, I understand what you're saying, but if they had not come along with their whole sustainable community concept, we would have been fully sustainable. There is
absolutely
no reason to believe
yes,
that we would have had any problems.
Because
yes.
that
now,
system plays unto itself and has
right.
has been taking our jobs and destroying our economy. It plays into itself. In other words, businesses that do not sign on and are not green certified or playing with the game within the system that they've created are not going to last. You will need to get either, if you're a builder, you'll need to be green certified, LEED certified, the coding system where you'll have to be certified for an international coding system if you're an electrician. Whatever you do, where they have already set up regulations and licensing, they will make you have to become certified. And if you are not, you will not get a job, or at least you will not get a job working for your county or your city. You won't get a chance like you used to put in a bid, because your bid won't count, because they're not going to look for you. They're going to look for someone that's on their green list. Okay,
right.
And
well,
that they know that if that you get the job and then you're on the green list, that they can get a grant, because the grant calls for someone that is certified, and all these things are coming around through grant money in partnership with private corporations and taxpayer money.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Those
now,
are called
the other
NGOs,
thing is,
and
the
money
is,
is funneled down, going right around us. That I'm in business for myself. I have two private businesses that I own, and I'm not certified. Once they make it that hairdressers have to be certified, or people that sew have to be certified green, then I'll be out of business, because I won't get any of the big jobs from the designers and the decorators that are going to be LEED certified or green build certified to work. So it's a catch-22, and they're destroying our economy with it.
Well, Deb, you know, we've already had a time in our history, many times in our history, where we had sustainable communities. In the medieval times, when you had little villages, they were sustainable. Everybody
we're
lived in the village.
Going back to that. That's exactly what they call us, little villages.
Yeah,
that's
South
how
America
identified
before
in the Ickley plan.
Industrialized. Yeah, that's
in
exactly
the livable
it. So,
communities plan as little villages.
Right, and so that basically destroys wealth and prosperity, private property rights, and advancement. In other words, we're going back to the Stone Age. I'm an airline pilot. I guess people aren't going to need to fly on big, bad airplanes anymore because they're destroying the planet, and nobody really needs to travel anywhere anyway. Just stay in your little village.
That's what's going to happen. And when you think about how we've gotten to this point, it's really now looking back and seeing where we are today. It's all been based on lies, and it's all been through the U.S. government that they let the lies come through, and it's lies in about the climate, it's lies in science, lies in the media, and lies in education. And they've been very clever, they being the communists, that's what I call them. I don't care what anybody else thinks, but I believe it's the communists that are doing this. And the communist, New World Order communists, because that's it. We're going to work for the government, and it's going to be each of us getting, a job from the government, and so we can eat and sleep and do what we have to do, and just to maintain life, but not to become anything more than a worker bee. And it's all about the lies. I mean, we all know that global warming has ended. Climate change is not caused by human activity, and CO2, you can't live without it. So I just cannot believe that they fooled the people for this many years, but they did, and they have created legislation in our government to support this since probably before even 1991, when George Walker Bush, Herbert Walker Bush, signed the climate convention. I'm sure it was before that they already spoke about this. And You know, since before, right, when the League of Nations were together, this was the plan. The regional plan was established then, there is no doubt. And that has been worked into everybody's legislation, you know, across the country, and it's been working down from there. So, like, there's no individualism in human beings and individual rights anymore. There's no individual states or counties anymore either. They all belong to a region. And so what the region does, it does together, each county. And the state, I don't know how or how we can get back to our 10th Amendment rights when we have regionalism happening, because the regionalism goes above and higher in
Deb, let me ask you a couple of questions.
Yes, Dick.
Deb, let me ask you, how were you raised? Were you raised in a city, on a farm, or what was your upbringing?
I was brought up on Long Island in New York, and I was raised in a suburb of the city, about 50 miles out of Manhattan, in a very a middle-class neighborhood. I had an education up till high school, and that was it.
Yeah. Okay. Let me put a couple holes in you. Everything you're saying is true as to what they are trying to do. Myself, I was a city boy from Minnesota, but I spent a great majority of my life also in the country. My father taught me how to hunt, how to fish, how to hunt, how to sustain myself.
Yeah.
And when we lose so many rights, you have to look at all of the people in this country that have served in the armed forces. Do you think they're going to be the country's going to be allowed to turn them into slaves? Or are they going to say, guess what? It's time for another revolutionary war.
I think you're right. I think we're headed that way. I'm very frightened of it.
I don't think the people will stand for it. They can pass any laws they want to.
At this time, with politics the way it is, that we all should be very aware of who we elect for our sheriffs. And we need to stress the fact that it's possible that some militia from somewhere that has not taken an oath or does not believe or remember that they took an oath to defend the Constitution and protect the people, if they do not remember that, then how will we survive? But at this time, I have to stress that we need sheriffs that are strong, and we're lucky in our state that we have sheriffs. Not all states have sheriffs, but we do here in Florida. And they
contrary,
are there.
Every state has a sheriff, ma'am.
No.
Massachusetts, yes, every
does
county
not have
has
sheriff.
A sheriff. Pardon?
Massachusetts, I believe, does not have sheriffs, and neither does Connecticut. They do not.
We have sheriffs.
Are you sure?
I think there are maybe three states that do not have sheriffs.
We have sheriffs up here in Massachusetts.
Then it's Connecticut that does not. I knew it was up there. And so
I'm going to have to do some research. I think by law, every county has to have a sheriff. The sheriff is the chief law enforcement officer
for the
county.
Actually, I don't think that even every single county in the state has a sheriff. I'm not sure.
In Florida?
In Florida,
yes,
they
do?
Yeah. Even Miami?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, one in Miami
Dade County
is not doing his job, if that's true.
Dade County wanted to hire me at one point in time, and that's Miami.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you
they
this. First of all, Dick, having a sheriff,
they're being
having
attacked.
A sheriff is either a state or a county function. So there could never be a federal requirement for every county to have a sheriff, because the federal government would be dictating county laws and county government. So it's going to vary from state
we'll
to state.
A sheriff is a county official and is typically the top law enforcement officer of a county.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
He was historically he was the commander of the militia in that county, and sheriffs are usually elected.
And you know that it's an interesting topic in itself, because it really isn't that old that sheriffs were appointed. It isn't that many years ago. I don't know if it was maybe even in the 50s. So it hasn't been forever that we've had sheriffs. But I guess at one point someone decided it would be a good idea, and they are a constitutional officer and can come to the defense of the people in the county. And
the position of sheriff started in England before our country was a country.
Yeah, but we didn't adopt it right away.
No, we didn't. We had to get our country free first.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's as old as that. I had read somewhere, and I think it was on Oath Keepers. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I think I read it on Oath Keepers that it started in the 40s or the 50s, and it was fair. You know, I was surprised that, because I think of way back when, you know, in the country, in the Western movies about sheriffs. And I thought, wow, they must have had sheriffs way back then. But then when I was reading about it, or maybe it was, you know, recently certain states just took them up in the later years. But I would have
thought... The position of sheriff has changed a number of times.
Oh.
In the West, you had town sheriffs, and you also had town marshals.
Oh.
Where now a sheriff is just a county, and a marshal is federal. As far as the state goes,
oh,
a marshal is assigned to a certain state and has his deputies. But eventually the sheriff evolved to where he's now in charge. He's a chief officer for the county.
The only reason I brought the sheriffs up also is because I had been, there are quite a few cities in the middle of the country. I don't remember if it was Missouri or wherever, if you've read or heard about it, whereas the feds came in and shut off the roads in the mountains. And the people that lived in the mountains, they used and traveled those roads, but they shut them right down. And it was at that point,
it was
Wyoming and Oregon. And at that point, they called the sheriff, and the sheriff came in and told the feds to open up the road. It belonged to the people. And they, you know, I mean, they really praised the sheriff because he stood with the people. And he never thought he... It's funny, but whoever the sheriff was never thought he would have to do anything like that. But he did. And now, here in Florida, with the takeover of all the land around the Everglades and people being threatened to... I think there was over 400 people that were, you know, literally led off their land because the EPA was fining them $1,000 a day for every day they didn't abide by some regulation that was ridiculous, or they were being told that they lived on a wetlands where the people had said, you know, we moved here. It was never told to us we lived on a wetland. And they have been threatened by the EPA. And this comes through the conventions that was a UN convention that Obama had put into his policy. And the EPA is actually running the whole country by regulations. I mean, even they are in charge of, which I read recently, in charge of the DOT and the trains. It's been the EPA all along, and that's, you know, an agency. And if you bring your dog to the vet now, they have a fee on the bill, the EPA. So these UN conventions that have now been put into policy through executive order by Obama have been revving up this Agenda 21 to the max. I mean, you could see we're rewilding here in Pinellas County like crazy. We have trees everywhere. We have retention ponds that look like they have grass growing out of the middle of them. And we have bicycle paths everywhere. We have trails that are just growing by the minute. And all this money that we don't have, where'd it come from if we have no money? It came from partnerships and nonprofit organizations and our state universities who get the grants are feeding their money and their grants for these different things that are going on in our counties, in Pinellas and also in Volusia, because that's who gets the money from the federal government, the education.
Well, Deb, you've opened the door to some other things we're going to talk about here today. We want to thank you for coming on and talking about these important issues that are facing us at the local level. We always say on the show, you need to get informed about what's going on at the local and state level, because you'd be surprised at the kind of things that your local and state legislators are doing to you. And so
yes,
we highly encourage people to go
like
to county.
I'd like to say one more thing before I leave you, that
sure,
there will be a convention called the Agendas Convention, and it's statewide, and it's this Saturday, October 1st in Lakeland. And you can read about it on agenda21today.com. And we'd like to have any of your listeners join us. It's a $5 entry, and we have world-renowned speakers speaking on Agenda 21. And it would be a great day. It starts at 9 a.m., and it ends about 4. And it would be wonderful to have newbies to come and listen and learn what they can do on the local level to stop this.
That's awesome. And I understand that agenda21today.com also has other useful information for people interested in the subject.
Yes, it does. We invite
okay,
them to look at it.
Great. Well, that's awesome. So this Saturday, everybody check out agenda21today.com if you're in the Central Florida area and you can make it to that meeting in Lakeland. Please do go. And I'm sure you'll be posting some information and other things on that website about that meeting. And it is important. And thank you, Deb, for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. Have a great day.
Thank you, Deb.
Thanks, Deb. It's good to speak with you all. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, now, Paula, this opens up the door for something that we were going to talk about today, and that is, I mean, we already kind of talked about the Krauthammer clip and the president. Does he have a communication problem or a policy problem? Well, he clearly has a policy problem. It's not about communication. It is about communication, except it's not about him broadcasting. It's about him listening. But now his former chief economic advisor, Peter Orszag, came out with an article that said, too much of a good thing. Why we need less democracy. Now, I'm going to let you read the segment out of his article that we took, Paula. But before I say that, first of all, he said, we need less democracy. We're not a democracy. We're a representative republic. We elect representatives to go to Washington to represent our desires and our beliefs, and they are there to legislate and represent us. This is not a democracy. So I love it when libtards try and talk about our democracy this and our democracy that. We are not a democracy. Democracies do not work. But let's see what this Democrat former slug operative for the Obama administration had to say about why we need less democracy. And he doesn't say it, but I'm saying it, and more statism. All right, Paula, take it away.
To solve the serious problems facing our country, we need to minimize the harm from legislative inertia by relying more on automatic policies and depoliticized commissions for certain policy decisions. In other words, radical as it sounds, we need to counter the gridlock of our political institutions by making them a bit less democratic.
Wow. So first of all, he says we need to minimize the harm from legislative inertia. You know, it was legislative inertia that got us a constitution. It was legislative inertia that got us a Declaration of Independence. These people really do hate this country. They hate the way it was founded. They hate the foundation and the basis for this nation. And so we want less legislative inertia. Legislative inertia is what has made this country great, Paula. And then he goes on to say that we need more commissions. Oh, man, like more bureaucracy. Now, this totally fits this administration. More bureaucracy, bigger federal government is the answer to all our problems. And how's that worked the last 3 years? It totally has not worked. It has just been horrific. So finally, we'll finish up this little part about with a quote from Thomas Jefferson, which is one of my favorite quotes, and it talks about just the opposite of what Mr. Orszag is saying about we need more commissions and more power in the federal government, less legislation, less democracy, on and on. What did Thomas Jefferson have to say about that, Paula?
What has destroyed liberty and the rights of man in every government which has ever existed under the sun? The generalizing and concentrating all cares and powers into one body.
there you have it. Now, I would ask Mr. Orzog, and I've asked many people, I've had discussions, if you will, on this stuff in the past, we'll say liberals, and you can even say we had arguments, but I would say to them, when I give a quote like that that makes it clear as to what the real answer is, because I believe that everything Thomas Jefferson said, and everything, but I mean, quotes like this, he knew exactly what he was talking about, and he got it right. So all I say to these liberals is simply, are you smarter than Thomas Jefferson? Will you go on record saying, I'm smarter than Thomas Jefferson, or maybe James Madison, or Benjamin Franklin, who all felt this way about government? No, they'll never go on record saying that. So the reality is this. They're lying to the American people. They're trying to deceive them and twist the truth and fool people. But Americans aren't being fooled anymore. We're not being fooled anymore, and they are getting desperate. So now we're going to talk about this just extends. Less democracy? How about suspending elections? Remember in June, Apollo, where we did a little segment about Commander Garcia comes back from the future. And if you want to hear that segment, go listen to it. It's in the archives. And I talk about an article that it may be coming out in an op-ed in a major news outlet here pretty soon. We'll see about that. But you can hear me give you the majority of it. And there may be a few editorial changes when it comes out. But I talk about how I, you know, this is all fictional, but how I found a way to go to the future and come back. And while I was there, I looked at future legislation. And the major pieces of legislation that have redefined our nation over the course of time have been based on the Commerce Clause and expanding the meaning of the Commerce Clause. And the intent of the article is to show you how destructive the Commerce Clause can and will become if we don't take a step back and redefine what clause really means in the Constitution. So it's gotten out of control, first of hand, under Obamacare. But then I step you through a process of it gradually taking more and more power from the people and destroying our Constitution. And the final piece of legislation, in my article talks about how the Commerce Clause is used to suspend elections. Now, I finish up the article by saying that all the liberals will say, Tom, it'll never happen. Oh, you're just, that'll never happen. We can always vote these people out of office. No, we can't vote them out of office because if they get too far along the way, when even liberals want to get rid of our government officials, they'll just simply suspend elections because in the name of fixing things and making the country better and on. So, Paula, what did the governor of North Carolina have to say recently about elections?
Well, what he had to say was, and for anybody that doesn't know who the governor is of North Carolina, Bev Perdue, I think we ought to suspend perhaps elections for Congress for 2 years and just tell them we won't hold it against them, whatever decisions they make, to just let them help this country recover. Governor Perdue had said this at a Rotary Club event in Cary, North Carolina.
Well, now, it's not like it's going to happen, and the libtards out there will say, oh, Tom, that's just one person. Hey, look, before you would have said nobody's ever even going to bring this up. Hey, it's now been brought up by a governor. I'm telling you, you can go on the Internet. You will find people making comments about that, and not just, you know, readers, but other pundits, even politicians, saying, well, maybe there's something to that. I don't think we should do that, but, you know, maybe there's something to it. They're already starting to consider that sort of thing. If the Democrats ever get back in full power, both houses and the presidency, they're going to take us down this path that I relate in my article. But more importantly, it has even been discussed at this point where my liberal friends would have said, and did say when I read this article, oh, Tom, it'll never happen. Well, first of all, every nation on the face of the planet has suspended elections at some point. Because of political expediency, the people in power didn't want to lose power. It's happened everywhere in the history of mankind. So the odds are against us unless we go back to maintaining and following our Constitution. So here's what we need to do. Well, let's back up a second. Paula, go ahead and read the little paragraph that was in my article that talks about the legislation that's and why we end up suspending elections. And so it's not so far-fetched based on what this governor just said.
Right, and you had written that for the article that you wrote and read on the June 27th show, coming from April 15th, 2024, was that a groundswell movement begins with the goal of ousting all incumbents. Liberals join conservatives in supporting grassroots candidates that feel the federal government has gone too far. By July, polling data shows a landslide of grassroots candidates winning. On August 1st, the president issues an executive order suspending elections. On August 18th, both houses pass, quote-unquote, the People's Choice Act, a bill which suspends elections until further legislation is passed. On September the 20th, the Supreme Court rules that under the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, the federal government has the authority to regulate elections, including suspending, changing the process, or even eliminating them altogether.
And there you have it. Now, I know liberals are having a hard time following this. They'll say, but Tom, the Commerce Clause, how does that allow you to suspend elections? Well, based on the argument that the Obama administration is making about Obamacare, elections affect interstate commerce, correct? They do. And if they affect interstate commerce, the government can regulate them, which means they can stop them, make them happen more frequently, less frequently. They can do anything they want to it. That's the whole premise behind Obamacare. But under the Commerce Clause, the federal government can tell you what to do, period. And Thomas Jefferson warned us against using one of these clauses in the Constitution to give the federal government complete power. He said it reduces the instrument, and he's talking about the Constitution, to that of a single phrase, constituting a Congress with the power to do whatever would be for the good of the Union. And as they would be the sole judges of good and evil, they will also have the power to do whatever evil they choose. And this is what we're facing with Obamacare. There's nothing in Obamacare that is onerous and as bad as the bill itself based on the Commerce Clause. If this bill stands, we are in a load of trouble. In fact, I'll tell you what, if this bill stands, and, well, I'll talk about this some other time, but in any case, I think people get the point. We'll talk about it a little bit more in a future show. But, Paula, anything else in the news that caught your eye or that we should talk about today before we wrap things up?
There seems to be a little talking point memo that's going around on Facebook that was put out back in March of 2010 by Tom Brandt, who writes for the Eastern Echo in Ypsilanti, Michigan, and it's called Republicans Are Turned Off by the Size of Obama's Package. He probingly observed that Republicans are not sparing the rod when it comes to beating up on President Obama's economic stimulus package, but it's clear that they are unable to raise their membership to withstand the newly found vigor of his congressional muscle. The Obama package may not be the best piece of stimulative legislation ever to enter the Oval Office, but it certainly beats any package Bush ever raised.
Oh, my gosh. I'm glad we list this show as mature and not all audiences. Yeah. Okay, good. So today it's R-rated. Yeah, I disagree with that quite honestly. I mean, when you're surrounded by people of your own party like Little Dick Durbin and Barney Frank, I can't agree with that. I think they got the package thing wrong there. But in any case, so. All right, Paula, we'll give you the last word today before we wrap it up. And we'll be back on Monday with a brand new show. And I don't know if we have any guests for Monday. I think Dick is already gone now. He'd tell us who we've got lined up for Monday. But we'll put it on the website and on Facebook and all that kind of stuff. And we will see everybody again on Monday. Go ahead, Paula.
Definitely. And for our troops that are serving overseas, specifically for my godson's father and his crewmates that are going out for the next 3 weeks on the USS Providence, we love you and miss you. We're going to miss you for the next 3 weeks. And Lord, hold our troops in your loving hands, protect them as they protect us, and bless them and their families for the selfless acts they perform for us in our time of need.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Paula. Well, take us home, and we will see everybody again next Monday. Good night, Paula.
Good night, Tom.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.